And what was so telling to me was that no matter how far in you are, we're all still trying to figure it out on a daily basis, and new things evolve and you can't anticipate everything. And you constantly have to be agile and learning and open to creative and new ways of doing things.
Welcome to Re-Energize.
This is a podcast about renewable energy.
Yeah, we know what you're thinking. Another duo of clean tech bros wonking out on energy policy.
Think again. This is about your energy.
How do you find peace on the emotional roller coaster of renewable development? How has this work transformed you?
We ask these questions together with people who have lived it.
Plug in.
It's time to re-energize.
Hi, Emily. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you too, Jay and Joel. It's so fun to be on this new podcast of yours. Thanks for thinking of me.
We're so happy to have you. Couldn't think of anybody better to have as one of our first guests, of course, after all the work we've done together over the years. And we're really looking forward to talking with you.
Likewise. We are pretty old, aren't we? Yes, that's what it means. We've been in this business a long time. We have a lot of experience together.
So, Emily, we're going to take a moment and have Joel introduce you to our audience. Joel, are you ready for that?
I am ready.
Okay. All right.
Be nice.
So you want me to go in? Yeah. Awesome. So that'd be nice. That was the hint. Yeah. So today we've got Emily Burks joining us. Emily is one of my all-time favorite people. I'll say it that way. It's easy to say one of my all-time favorite colleagues, but I meant what I said. She's one of my favorite all-time people, just with a period after that. So Emily is someone who brings a great deal of expertise to this format. So she is a lawyer by training, but spent the last two decades leading, I don't know, Emily, at this point, I've lost count. It's dozens, it might be over 100 transactions of projects of all shapes and sizes, including leading, us in terms of the transaction of selling community energy. And we're just so lucky to have her.
Thank you, Joel and Jay, for having me here. I feel very much the same about both of you, personally and professionally, just salt of the earth people. So it's great to be here and love what you guys are trying to tackle here and share with the world.
Three of us worked together probably at least 10 years and did a lot, accomplished a lot, faced a lot of challenges, tough projects, but we came through a little wiser on the other side, I would say.
Yeah. Get a little smarter each deal. Yeah, I was just going to say, Jay, I'm really curious to see what story we're going to get into here. You know, one of the beauties of this is that Jay and I don't really know, the story that the guest has chosen until we get into it. And Emily is someone who has worn so many different hats in her career: general counsel, transaction lead. She's financed projects. She's done origination for projects. She's spent the last couple of years in green hydrogen. So I'm just really curious to see which story ends up here. But sorry, Jay, you were I cut in there. Go ahead.
Well, I think that's great. It's a good segue. Emily, will you give us just a quick summary, two sentences or so to tee up the story that we're going to get into?
Okay. My story has to do with us selling one of the biggest projects we had at the time and in the market to a very big player that would later have some financial troubles.
That sounds tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. And then some.
Emily, what I'd like to hear from you is what was this experience about? And I guess, why did it matter to you specifically?
This experience for me was incredibly eye-opening because I was working very closely with people who had incredible experience in both wind and then solar in financing and selling large-scale projects to creditworthy off-takers. And I was watching and learning. At this point, I was still pretty new in the renewable space. So it was about 4 years in. And I thought I was watching and learning with folks who had seen it all. And what was so telling to me was that no matter how far in you are, we're all still trying to figure it out on a daily basis, and new things evolve and you can't anticipate everything. And you constantly have to be agile and learning and open to creative and new ways of doing things. And that's really what my takeaway was when this story came to be, where I was working with these really seasoned folks and we had a creditworthy offtaker and we had a parent guarantee and we had development milestones and a back-end payment that was secured by a company that since when we signed and when we actually went to COD, started a yield co and got way out over their skis financially. And we were an unsecured creditor with millions of dollars at risk, which was a huge amount of money for us at a small company. So it was like, what do we do? And to top it off, in the interim from signing it, the 2 years since we'd signed the deal and when we're supposed to get this payment and this counterparty filed for bankruptcy, we had signed, I mean, we had gotten really good at pricing in the market. We had signed, you know, the largest utility scale project in Georgia and sold it and had a similar structure. The largest utility scale project in Minnesota and sold it, similar structure. The largest project in Virginia and sold it, similar structure. So if this was an issue, it was going to be an issue across the board potentially. The ramifications in my mind were like, whoa, this could be incredibly impactful for a small business like ours, and really made me nervous about keeping all our people in the tent.
Right. So I think one of the things that we'd love to have you do is just set the stage for us about where you were in your life and your career at this point in time.
So we actually signed this deal on Valentine's Day, 2014. And so at that time in my life, I had an 18-month-old and a 4-year-old. I was, you know, a dual-income family. My husband's working, I'm working. I had been struggling for a while with some health issues that were pregnancy-induced. I had an autoimmune disorder and then a really big iron deficiency where I was having to go to a cancer unit and get iron infusions every 6 months. So I was really struggling physically to kind of have enough energy to show up for my family, for myself, and for work. So it was challenging for sure. But I've always really admired the saying I think Brent Oliver had of like, how great is it that we can do well by doing good? And so if I was going to give up myself when I was having a hard time and try and provide for my family, this was what I wanted to be.
I'm curious, Emily, to hear you, maybe start to dive a bit deeper. I mean, you gave us a bit of a background in terms of what happened, but maybe tell us like some more specifics. And I'd love to hear from you, like what it was like for you personally during this experience.
Yeah. Sure. So when we signed this deal in 2014, it was super exciting. Like I said, we had probably transacted on between 15 and 75 megawatts as a company in its entirety. Our largest projects were between 7 and 10 megawatts at the time. So this was a huge jump in scale to have 120 megawatts. And in all honesty, in the community energy days, we were 3 years behind where we thought we were going to be from a megawatt target development standpoint. We had had some headwinds when we first started between pricing and then Solyndra, which had a backlash in the financing markets and hit some of our projects. So this really was a huge win for us to have this enormous project at scale with a counterparty who was really rising in the market from an ownership perspective.
What was your role in this transaction?
So in this one, I was alongside our founder, who was the commercial lead, and our outside counsel. I was in-house counsel, and we were looking at how to structure this deal and how to facilitate this sale. And at the same time, we brought in this counterparty early on because there were some initial interconnection postings that we couldn't afford to post ourselves. So they were at the table with us negotiating the PPA and very much in the game earlier than we normally would have had a counterparty there, just given the financial requirements of this particular project. And it was, in large part, a very big learning experience for me because, again, everyone who was at this company was very much aware of this deal because it was such a big deal for our company, given the size and in the market.
And you had been working in solar for about 4 years at the time.
Correct.
And you'd done a bunch of transactions, kind of in a similar role, but, you know, much, much smaller.
Much smaller. We had had our first project, Keystone, as a Pennsylvania sale. We had sold that project. We had a portfolio in New Jersey. We had another portfolio up in Massachusetts, but again, smaller projects that we were selling. So this, the scale of this, the credit support postings, the enormity of what was going to have to be procured from an EPC perspective, just was much more than our company at the time could manage.
So Emily, I'm really trying to put myself in your shoes here. So this is like marquee transaction, biggest one you've done to date.
Yep.
Erstwhile, you're battling, you know, these health issues, right? You're excited about the work. But now you've uncovered, you know, experienced, I guess, this unpredictable, I don't know what you call it. It's almost like a time bomb, like a ticking time bomb that just went off, you know, where it's like, oh shoot. Okay. This very large, seemingly, right, you know, creditworthy counterparty is now incapable of making the payments, you know, that is outlined in the contract. And not only that, it's the same structure that you've arranged, you know, the whole industry arranged for all these other projects. I'm wondering, like, you know, was there a specific moment that you feel like where do you remember the moment or the week or the day, you know, when this information came to light?
Right around March or April of 2016, DOD was supposed to occur that summer. And we get wind of the fact that this is likely going to happen. And we have a, you know, powwow, the owners and myself and outside counsel, and what can we do and how are we going to figure this out? We're talking to people at this company, but they're not sure. Most of them are being let go. It's not really anybody who has any real decision-making power who's available to have a conversation with high-level execs. So it just feels so outside of our control. And yet the thing that's exciting is that the project will be built. We just may not get paid. So it's like, yes for solar, right? Yes, the project will be built in this enormous, the largest solar facility east of the Mississippi is going to be put in the ground, and we're going to prove the economics of solar out west. Like, that will be achieved. But the company and the brain trust that put all this together and figured this out is not going to be paid and will be strapped for cash to do even more, right? So that's the rub. It's like, this is a highly capital intensive business. And the people doing this, the people I was lucky enough to happen upon to meet, who had done it on the wind side and were trying to do it again on the solar side, are so smart and so capable and so able to drive the market that if you can't give them money, if we can't make that work, then this industry and our ability to impact climate change, to me, I was like, this is really scary. These are the people who need to be doing it. We have to somehow make sure we recoup this money and get these folks paid. And at the same time, you know, this is a small company. You know, all the people, we know their families, we know. So it's not just, we want to keep everybody together. We want to take care of everybody. And that amount of money for our size company at that point in time was huge.
Yeah. Jay, before we get to, and Emily, before we get to the kind of any key decision or decisions you faced here, I'm just wondering if we can just pause a little bit longer on what you were just saying. You know, something you said that jumped out at me, or two things jumped out at me. One was when you kind of talked about how it sounds like maybe mixed feelings, like great that the project is going forward, but really bad for you and your colleagues, right, who did all this great work. But then also you said this word, like, it was scary, you know, and I'm just curious if you can, rather than have me guess, you know, if you could unpack, like, what were you feeling during those days or weeks or months?
I was really worried that there wasn't necessarily a near-term revenue event that was coming up that would allow us to have more runway. So it's kind of how I thought a lot. At Community, we'd have these lumpy cash flows. And that would allow, would buy us time to invest in new projects and get them further down the development path and then monetize some along the way to keep the lights on. And at the time, Joel, we didn't have a lot of the community solar gardens, which were smaller projects, but incredibly rich from a financial standpoint, given the size. So those were a great introduction that you brought to Community as far as just how do we maybe make our revenue sources less lumpy. So I was just really worried that we had had a layoff in 2011 because we had a couple projects fall through, and that was incredibly hard. And I was only about a year in, you know, and this is 3 years later where, again, you know everybody, you know their families. And yes, you want to do well personally, but it's more important to keep this team together and take care of everybody. And that, I think, to me was the scariest part. I kept saying, did we miss this? And my biggest takeaway was, even if you're sitting around giants, right, who have done this before, always asking the questions and always trying to be creative in your thinking so you can anticipate something that might be new and not being afraid to speak up. I think, I'm not saying I anticipated this, but I think what my takeaway from this was, and what Eric Blank said to me point blank, is, you know, we're all making this up. No one's ever done this before. And all you can do is to make the best decisions you can in the moment with what you know. And as much as I was scared, it was also incredibly liberating because I didn't feel so inadequate to be at the table.
One question that just occurs to me, you know, as you're talking about, you know, sort of the risk of having to cut back on staff,
yeah,
right? If the dollars aren't there, potential for cutbacks, we'd been through it before. I know that at that point in time, you were one of the most important people at this company, and you would go on to be, you know, continue to be one of the most important people. Did you ever feel for yourself that fear that you might be losing your job, or did you feel confident and comfortable in your role and really just kind of more worried for, you know, the rest of the company and people's families, et cetera?
Initially, I felt like I might lose my job. I think I rarely did. I think it was the look. Yeah. Eric's this commercial person and outside counsel. These guys have done a zillion deals, but it's on me to anticipate risk and to be that person challenging and thinking ahead. And I did, and in large part, had they had to put someone forward, I probably would have raised my hand and said, look, that I didn't catch this. But I didn't feel secure, I'll tell you that much. I felt like I had missed it. And I felt like, even though no one was, like, the thinking was no one was to blame, it was this thing, it was this new vehicle we were putting in place that no one's done, that, you know, why didn't we put it there? And whose fault was it? If it wasn't mine.
Yeah.
Right. It kind of buck stops here, right? It's,
yeah,
that was scary. But again, like that led Eric to make those comments of like, look, yeah, this is awful and it stinks, but I didn't catch it either. Like nobody knows everything and we're all making the best decisions we can. And to have someone who had been so successful say that to me and not take my job away and to realize that, wait, this must have happened to him in a different form in other ways too. And to people he looked up to as well. It was this aha moment that was, again, liberating to say, we're not always going to get it right.
Yep.
It's not possible.
And I want to just throw in one comment real quick, because I remember being in a situation where I thought I had missed something and it was a big deal. And I came to you and you gave me a similar pep talk. It's like, hey, we worked on this as a team. You know, we actually did think about this and we made a choice. And that was very comforting to me at a point in time, you know, a few years later when I had felt like I had missed something pretty significant. So I appreciated that.
Yeah.
That's true. You know?
Yeah. It really is.
It's a village. You know? Sometimes you do it, sometimes you don't.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, you could either succeed or you can learn, right? It's like you can only do one of those things. Emily, I wonder, it's interesting hearing you talk about this. And it's funny, we did learn from, you learned from this and you helped all of us learn from this. And it's funny looking back on this, hindsight's 2020, but some number of years later, I remember negotiating subsequent MIPAs with counterparties where we took this learning lesson and specifically asked, you know, how to solve in the BIPA, asking for a project guarantee, you know, instead of a, you know, just the parent guarantee, to supplement the parent guarantee. And I distinctly remember every time we proposed it, the counterpart would just pause for a while and then say something like, "That's strange. It's a good point. We've never had anyone ask for that before." So it's just like, and this was like multiple years later, it was still, so it's funny. It's like the industry, you know, this just didn't, this still doesn't happen most of the time. Right. And most people don't think of it. And so it's more fuel for saying, wait, this is, you know, people are missing this everywhere. Right. Because it's kind of a, it's not a standard form thing. And I wonder, as you think about it, it's kind of like there's oftentimes two learnings we can walk away with from these events. Like one is like, okay, how do I anticipate that? You started talking about that. How do we anticipate this kind of risk? But I'm wondering, is that the most powerful learning lesson from this? Like I'm wondering, or is there something even more powerful there?
To me, it's making sure that you're asking all the questions and not feeling afraid to, right? There's so many times I've seen people say, "Oh, I get what you're saying," or "I kind of get it," or no, like stop. Even if you feel stupid and you say, "I don't know that I really fully understand what, how does that cover us?" Like, or challenge the status quo. You know, "Joe, that's really interesting. You want a project level. Why do you want that?" And I can't tell you how many times I walked people through the why. We need this. And then let me tell you, if you got any concern about risk, what is that risk? You tell me what that risk is and I will walk you through why that it doesn't exist. So, you know, the biggest takeaway for me has always been, don't be afraid then to go in and ask for things that aren't socialized and standard and well known, right? Creative workarounds in financing, tax equity. No, right? It's like that example from, you know, I want my red stapler because that's my red stapler. And like, you know, it's no, it can be different. And you have to be willing to say, okay, I understand you're uncomfortable. Can you tell me what risk you're concerned about that you're trying to solve for? And then really making somebody say what they're concerned about. And half the time it's, well, I've never seen that before. Okay. Well, let's, you know, and walking through a
little. We have.
Exactly. But regardless of it's this specific example or another one, right? Like you have been so many times, and I think that's really the takeaway for me in the solve here for this problem moving ahead was I am now in the market, not afraid to ask for things that are not default standard. If it's a unique solution and it gets us to where we need to be and it doesn't hold up a project and it solves a problem, I will ask for it. And I will be the one all day long explaining why there's no risk to the other side and why it's an appropriate solve. And that's what it did. Like I said, it kind of gave me, it freed me from this idea that other people know better. Like there's one way to do it. And that what we are doing is hard. In large part, we are breaking into new markets. We are creating new things and products. And so oftentimes it's easier to say, no, I can't do it because I don't know how is really what's underlying it. And if you can be the one coming to the table with creative solutions and explanations and teaching the market why they should accept something new and why it will help the market move faster or move around an issue and a risk that is a good solve for everybody. To me, that was the eye-opening thing about this. It was something we didn't anticipate. We came up with a solve. The solve was something the market hadn't seen, and it was able to be socialized and absorbed, and we moved ahead feeling comfortable knowing that, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, meh, not so much, right?
Right.
And that didn't happen again to us.
Right.
That's right. And, you know, I think one of the things that I'm thinking about as you're talking is that it's been 10 years plus, you know, and the industry has grown and evolved and developed. And yet here we are kind of staring down, you know, a whole new potential shift, right, in policy and things like that, where it just keeps changing. And so having that mindset that you're talking about of, you know, asking the questions, being willing to speak up, even if you're unsure, is really important and continues to be important as things continue to change around us.
You know, you speak up. If you're wrong, you learn. If you're right, you push things forward.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. Sometimes the folks who are most new to something, the most junior people in the room, see it differently because they haven't been doing it for years. And so the idea that you have a new eyes on something, that's a gift. That's a really big gift to people who have been doing it for 5, 10, 20 years, right? It's fresh eyes, fresh perspective. So that's the, to me, that's be brave. We're doing hard stuff. Like speak up and either learn or make progress and show us how we should do it or if there's a better way to do it, right? Those I think are inspiring things for someone getting into this and to not be afraid because we're all, in some way, we are all figuring this out, trying to make the best decisions we can with the information that we have, and it's imperfect and we will make mistakes, but you got to keep moving ahead, you know?
And one of the things I love about what you just said is, you know, I think we're sitting here with a lot of experience in this industry and thinking about how we can share that experience with people who are coming up. Mm-hmm. And there's value there. We know that. But then you also pointed to the fact that, you know, there are these people coming up who are new, who are going to be able to bring a new perspective to us and help us, you know, see things differently and bring new ideas to the table and those fresh eyes. That's really powerful. Also, I really loved that you made that point.
I feel Emily. That. I feel I learn from a lot of the people that I'm working with that are new to the industry. Just some of the questions they ask. I'm like, I haven't really thought about that in a long time. That's a really good question, you know?
It's a really good point. No, it's okay. I'm curious, Emily, we've talked about this moment where this unanticipated challenge got dropped on your desk. And I'm curious, and we've talked about specifically how you reacted and kind of came to these key learnings of broadening your view to ask all questions, to challenge, and then also to say, hey, wait, we are going to make mistakes and that's okay. I'm curious that were there any other key decisions that you had to make? Like, what did you do to manage this? And how you mentioned right there, you kind of said like, yeah, even though these things happen, you just kind of keep moving forward. How did you keep moving forward and what did you do next?
The way that I learn is very much by doing. And so getting more and more experience in all of these types of projects and coming, you know, encountering issues. Every project has issues, right? Small projects, big issues, big projects, big issues. You always have something you have to solve. You always have obstacles you have to overcome. And the more experience I've been able to have, the better I become at finding creative solutions. And then you remember them. So you have this library of experience you can draw from and say, it's not exactly like that, but it's kind of analogous. And I'm going to, and so then, like, if you don't move forward, you don't have all that. If you don't have any issues that pop up, you're not getting better, really. You might have exposure to things, but you're not the one trying to figure out how to move it forward. And to me, that is also the takeaway is, yeah, we made a mistake and we moved ahead and we figured it out. Wow, there was a solve. Yeah. You know, and Joel, I've heard you say before, and I totally agree. I think every problem can be solved. Whether or not it's worth solving or too expensive to solve is a different question. But if you get the right intentions and the right momentum around something and it, you create options and you have a conversation with a brain trust of people you trust and think are all trying to do the same thing, you can really move mountains. Key is bringing people along, though. I will say that. You got to be able to communicate with all the different stakeholders. And there are a lot of people who have their fingers in the pies from different perspectives and trying to protect different interests, right? And so making sure that everyone understands the issue, what we're doing to fix it, and that it's okay for everybody. You know, that's another piece of this, especially as you get into project financing, the debt, the tax on all tax equity lenders, all of those folks need to be on board with whatever it is you're proposing for the project to be successful. So it's also getting exposure to that and being able to talk their talk, right? And understand Absolutely. The things they're concerned about.
And Emily, I'm wondering, because I wasn't as close to this, even though we were colleagues at the time, I wasn't as close to what happened in this specific instance. So I'm trying to remember, and I'm trying to take what you're saying here and make sure I'm tying it together in my own mind. So the specific issue where the counterparty owed us money but wasn't able to pay, if I'm hearing you right, and based on my recollection too, there was ultimately no path there to get paid, right? I mean, it was literally they just could not. And so if I'm hearing you correctly, the solution in this case was to widen it and say, we've got all these other assets. Let's get it right in those contracts. Let's get it right in our, you know, make sure we get paid in our existing contracts and in the other future ones. And that got us in a shorter path. Is that correct though? I just want to make sure. Yeah.
That was one of the results, was that we took this learning and applied it across our portfolio to make sure this didn't happen again. With respect to this specific thing, we filed as an unsecured creditor and a bankruptcy claim. We filed a state court action with an executory contract claim. We ended up recovering because we were able to figure out how to create issues for the ultimate buyer of this asset out of the bankruptcy and their financing. We ended up recovering 20% of that final payment. But it was, you know, 18 months later and only 20%.
Yeah.
So yeah. We fought.
20%, yeah. 20% more than 0%.
Exactly.
20% exactly. Of the time we get it every time. All right.
So we learned and we got some money, but not everything.
Yeah. Not everything. No, but still, it's really incredible. But we kind of didn't take no for an answer though.
That's no. And that was a lot of interesting legal theory around how could we do this and what's the argument. Again, creative, trying to figure it out, worth our time given the amount of money to, you know, we're not going to spin our wheels unless it's impactful, and it was. So that in and of itself was an interesting pursuit.
Yeah.
That's a whole different podcast episode.
Yeah, that's a whole.
Yep. Relentless.
That's the repayment podcast. This is re-energized.
Yeah. Exactly.
So Emily, you were telling us that at the time of this experience, you've got two young kids at home. You and your husband are both working. You're, you know, having some health impacts related from your pregnancy. And most people in this industry know that it's very male dominated. How did it feel to you? You know, what did you experience being a woman in that situation?
It can be very isolating, because when you're looking around, you don't necessarily have colleagues who can relate directly to what you're trying to manage. I went back to work 6 weeks after having my kiddos and had these health issues and didn't really look around to see anyone in my office kind of having a similar setup. A lot of folks had a stay-at-home partner, which is great too. I came from a traditional family. I was the youngest of three. My mom stayed home. I was very fortunate. But because of that, I didn't look around and see anyone, and I didn't have that model growing up either. It felt overwhelming at times to figure out, how do I become the best version of myself as a mom, as a colleague, and as a wife, a daughter, a friend, all the roles that people play in their lives. It was often likened it to, you know, being in the forest and you have a machete trying to find your way. Sometimes you can make a path and sometimes you hit, you know, lots of obstacles. And I would just like to say that my hope in doing so was that my daughters would have a different model that they could choose to aspire to or not, but that they would at least have somebody that was trying to do it differently. And you know, the people that I worked with and the women that were coming up, and the men, quite frankly, that were coming up below me, would have an example of a woman who was working and trying to be successful and ambitious, as well as present at home and loving and available emotionally to her kids and her family. So I realized that, again, we're all making it up, whether it be at work or at home, and you are going to make mistakes, and we have to give ourselves grace in doing so, and ideally come open-hearted to the people we work with and to ourselves, that we're trying to do great things and they're hard. So that's my hope, is that I am giving a good model to other people, and I'm trying to figure it out every day. You know, it's not like it's one and done and you figure it out. It's a constant practice of showing up and choosing to be present and giving the best version of yourself at home and at work.
That's great. That's awesome.
Well, Emily, thank you for sharing that. I can personally say that you have been a model to me, and I think to a lot of other people as well. And we're so thankful for you being willing to share that. It's amazing. It's an act of generosity to share what you just shared, I think, to so many other people. And before we part ways here, you know, I think Jay and I would both be curious. Just, we spent the last 40 minutes or so going deep on this story, this experience that had a palpable impact in you. And what would you say to anything you'd want to leave people with, parting words to summarize it?
Just be brave. Show up every day and be brave, and don't be afraid of making mistakes. We all do. Life's short. My daughter gave me a quote recently. I wasn't born to be afraid to exist. So be brave. Get out there and do it.
That's awesome. Emily, thank you so much. I've got chills, you know, to be here talking with you, somebody I so greatly admire and have learned so much from myself. Just feel so, so lucky to have this opportunity to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on Re-Energize.
If you like what you hear, if you feel your energy rising, please pass this on to your friends.
And hey, you might have a story to share. If that's the case, you can reach out to us using our email address found in our show notes.